Let's allow that Friday energy to seep into the program, into the next 2 hours, into our day. Happy Friday, happy almost weekend. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. And we are alight with excitement because of the Hall of Fame game last night. Just kidding. No, but not that nobody, I watched it. I had it on in the background. It was a painful watch. But you know what's not going to be painful? The next 2 hours. We have a great show planned for you with all kinds of stunning transitions like the one I just gave you. Finally, it's a teammate, but finally somebody is saying the quiet part out loud from the WNBA about the WNBA's stupidity, bleeping stupidity, as it regards Caitlin Clark and the treatment that the injured superstar, and she is a superstar, has received in a league that she is going to make and has already made much wealthier than it was before her arrival. We will hear from Sophie Cunningham later in the show. Yesterday, did a fairly deep dive, maybe 2 days ago, start of the show, all the days bleed together, on Jim Harbaugh and his philosophy of heaping praise, even if it feels a little silly. It apparently runs in the family. John Harbaugh had something to say about Lamar Jackson that may raise your eyebrows, but the point is to raise Lamar's self-confidence. We'll talk about that. We have a warning. We have done a historical bit of research on behalf of Arch Manning. Checks can be made out to Bill Ryder, P.O. Box, whatever my address actually is, because there's reason to think that maybe, despite what feels like the certainty of Arch's greatness in the NFL, that perhaps he needs, not gets to decide, should decide, what will he want to do. He needs to spend not just this year or next year at Texas. We'll give you the historical reasons for that. Historically great guy, Rob Dibble, will be on the show in an hour. Longtime major leaguer, radio host. We'll do buy or sell. We'll do bum of the week. We'll hear from Ryan Hickey. Phone number, if you want to call us, 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN as an Infinity Sports Network, which you are listening to right here. And I have made a vow, a pledge to try and get more of your phone calls on the air. We've been working on that. Step one is that we have a producer in Ryan Hickey who actually answers the phone, so that's a great step forward. And step two is I need to do that. We've been working on it. I think we've been doing it. So keep calling in, 888-710-4ISN, and we will get you on the air. I normally roll my eyes at the inevitable holdout, contract disagreement, even I want to be traded news that is just a part of the ritual and the negotiating realities of the NFL in July and August. But the news involving Terry McLaurin, the very talented Commanders wide receiver, that first came from Jordan Schultz, by the way. Let's give Jordan Schultz credit. NFL insider without a home right now, which I can relate to as an NBA insider without a home. That McLaurin wants a trade should be a great, big, menacing, flashing red light for the Washington Commanders. They need to acquiesce. Look, the details are complicated. They are far apart on what they agree on. There are, you know, when you buy a house and your real estate agent gives you comps, well, in the next neighborhood over, the comps for Terry McLaurin are complicated. If you are the Commanders, you can kind of see this negotiation, McLaurin wanting $30 million per year, and the fact he's going to be, what, 30 pretty soon, and you can say, that's too much money. We're not going to give that kind of cash, because other deals that have gotten done, T. Higgins comes to mind, 4 years, $115 million, 26 years old, aren't quite in that range, and they're of guys that are younger. And if you're McLaurin, you can kind of look at it and you can say, well, remember when Tyreek Hill was 30 years old, he got a deal at exactly $30 million per year. Details have to be worked out. They absolutely have to be figured out as it relates to the cap. But this is a Commanders team whose momentum of excellence, whose cultural change from Dan Snyder, it seems inevitable because it's been a minute now that the Josh Harris era in Washington has worked in large part because he's not Daniel Snyder, the former owner, and that we've got a GM who knows what he's doing, and we've got a head coach who knows what he's doing, and they drafted a quarterback who was a rookie last year, and Jaden Daniels, who more than knows what he's doing. But we've learned this lesson in the National Football League. Take nothing for granted. Nothing is inevitable. Nothing is forever. And maybe the only thing more fleeting than your health in football is the idea of excellence. We have been spoiled by the Patriots. We have been spoiled by the Chiefs. Sustained excellence isn't real for most players, teams, coaches, GMs, organizations in the National Football League. And you lose these things in the margins. And the reality for the Commanders is you're not just paying, and I get the risk. Look, McLaurin's had a 1,000-yard receiving season each of the last five seasons. The guy has been inevitable, and he's been inevitable in four of the seasons where Jaden Daniels wasn't throwing him the football. When you were dealing with guys who were competent at best, who were serviceable if you want to be polite. I don't know why I'm being polite, probably because it's a Friday. His 13 touchdowns were the second most in the National Football League last season. On the face of it, in a vacuum, and trying to assess 2025 this season, you can make an argument about whether or not Terry McLaurin is worth a certain amount of money and the risk of the guaranteed cash and the years you're going to give at an age where he's going to be 30 this year and then 31 and 32. We know how math and time works. But this is about more than just McLaurin's situation. You want to keep, for lack of a better term going, or better term, you want to keep the good vibes rolling. You want the culture to be what you need it to be. You want Jaden Daniels and see CJ Stroud. I keep bringing this up because we're such, me too, captains of the moment. You want Jaden Daniels to do the best that he can, if he can, to avoid injury. And not just injury, to avoid the mental injury of a sophomore slump. CJ Stroud was good last year. He was good. He was really good. He wasn't the star player that we thought he was going to be. And it wasn't because of any physical problem. It's because the National Football League catches up to you. We discussed this the other day. There is more tape. There is more time. Having covered the NFL and covered college football and known the culture of defensive coordinators who are grinders and looking for jobs, I'm telling you, they spend their offseason, the minute they get that schedule, the minute they know who they're playing, watching tape again and again and again and again. And they're going to spend a lot more time on Jaden Daniels this year, and they have the tape to do it, than they did last year. They're going to have whole game plans every time that guy goes into a game. And looking up and having Terry McLaurin there and knowing that your best receiver is available and a guy that's really well-liked is incredibly important to this football team. Look, there's been a lot of receiver deals that have happened. And again, the guys I'm going to give you here are mostly younger dudes, and it sort of points to why the Commanders are really hesitant, reticent, going slow to get deals done. T. Higgins got 4 years and $115 million. He's 26. DK Metcalf got 4 years, $132 million. That's more in the range of what McLaurin would like. He's 3 years younger. He's 27. Garrett Wilson, 4 years, $130 million at 25. Maybe you can kind of point to Cortland Sutton, I guess. 4 years, $92 million. He is 29. He turns 30 in October, so very similar age. And there's no doubt that McLaurin's a better, more accomplished, more reliable receiver than Sutton. There's also no doubt that if you do the math on that, 4 years, $92 million is, you know, $21.5 million, whatever the number is. That's a lot less. That is what the Commanders are looking at. And the $23 million per year for Sutton, I think that's what it is, the guy has just two 1,000-yard seasons since 2018. I understand why McLaurin wants to get paid. And I understand why the Commanders in a vacuum wouldn't want to do that. Here's the deal. It's not just about what McLaurin is worth. It's about the value of a team that is in sync and that is comfortable and that is happy. The Commanders are not half of the teams in the National Football League or more that have been well-run, success or otherwise, for the last 5 or 10 years. Don't sleep on the absolutely brutal reality of what a bad organization can do and the echoes of how it can affect you for years. The Cowboys are going to take a long time to climb out of Jerry Jones' ownership situation. And if they get lucky when he is no longer calling the shots and Stephen Jones is really good, and I'm skeptical, and they get lucky and they hire the right GM, and they get lucky and they hire the right coach, and they get lucky like they did in D.C., or talented enough to draft the right quarterback, it doesn't guarantee anything. See the Chicago Bears. Our guy Ty Dunn, who has a great Substack, Go Long TD, you should subscribe. It's $6 a month. It's worth the money. I don't know what he's working on exactly. I don't know if it's good or bad, but he's doing a deep dive on the Chicago Bears that's going to be coming out. And I talked to him yesterday. He spent a lot of time on it. Knowing the Bears' history, and I could be wrong, it probably ain't going to be laudatory. Why? Doesn't matter if you have Ben Johnson or Caleb Williams or a bunch of other talent. The echoes of bad ownership last, and they still can in Washington, even though the former guy is just a memory. You don't want to lose the opportunity to capitalize on how quickly you've turned things around. You want to pay your guys, even as a bridge to a better future culture-wise, even if it's not a great decision monetarily a year or two from now, to just keep this transition going. Consider it more than an investment, paying Terry McLaurin, more than an investment in football or the football field or success or wins or touchdowns or receiving yards or even comfort for Jaden Daniels. Consider it an investment in still continuing to pull the poison from the body of the Commanders that was injected by the owner before Josh Harris got there. These things are real. We have former players in all the time, and they'll just talk about, man, sometimes you just go to a place and you know it's a mess because of the ownership and how it affects the culture. Look, McLaurin's a respected guy. And you can hear that from Adam Peters, the GM. And I'm not saying that these things are easy. At the start of training camp, normally you get access to general managers as well as everybody else. And so this was a week or two. This is like July 22nd, so what, about a week ago, where Peters, this is a week before McLaurin asked for this trade, for this exit. They know in D.C. it's not going to be an easy negotiation, but you can hear they don't just like his football. They respect the guy.
Obviously, you would like to get these things done quicker than longer, but it's not always going to happen that way. We're dealing with a really, in the case of Terry, a really good player and a really good person. So really understanding that and never losing sight of that and making sure that, you know, every conversation we have is very, you know, straightforward, honest, and in good faith, and just keeping that mindset throughout, because there's going to be twists and turns, but just having, you know, that confidence and just understanding that our goal is to get a long-term deal done, and so just keeping focused on that, and you know, whatever happens, you know, along the way, just understand that he's a great player, and we want to keep him here.
Tough lesson that I learned in life, and I learned it. Not everybody has that works in radio or TV or anything else. Is you never get paid what you deserve. You don't. You get paid what you negotiate. That's how it works, and that means that if you are Terry McLaurin and you have leverage, even if it's a weird kind of leverage, the kind I'm talking to you about, you utilize it. And if that leverage is real, and I think it is for the Commanders, then you have to give in. You have to look past just the comps of receivers. Because I know you can point to Mike Evans, who at 31 got a few years at $20 million a year, and say, I don't know, 30 feels like a lot. And I already mentioned Tyreek Hill, that when he was 30 years old, he got a 3-year, $90 million deal. And this is not a shot at Terry McLaurin. It's not. I think he's great. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not what Tyreek Hill was when he signed that deal. That isn't the point. The point is that the Commanders are at this incredibly important pivot moment, this transitional moment, not just to be really good this year, not just coming off a conference championship appearance, not just coming off the most surprisingly successful season of the NFL last year. They are in the process of trying to rid themselves of whatever residual garbage came with the person that used to own the team. Winning does that. Confidence does that. Setting a new culture with a guy like Jaden Daniels, who's not just the face of the organization, he'll be the heartbeat behind the scenes. But there's no promise that last year will be this year. And I'm going to point to Houston again. 2 years ago, they were the belle of the ball. 2 years ago, they were the team to beat. A year ago today, every expert that came on this show, and I agreed, thought the team in the AFC most likely to take out the Chiefs was the Houston Texans. That feels laughable now. Not because we're a bunch of idiots, but because it's really hard to sustain success, and if things go wrong in the margin, see Stephon Diggs being a really big investment that did not work out. Investment not monetarily, just in the sense of this is going to push us over the top. Having a guy come in that you think is going to push you forward and not perform and not be healthy at the level you expect it can bring you down. Having a guy that's in-house, that is well-respected, that is well-liked, that's already shown what he can do. Again, 5 consecutive 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And just letting him go, that's the problem. That's the leverage McLaurin has. And Diana Rossini has already reported this. Isn't shocking, but it's great reporting. There are multiple teams, not one team, multiple teams, according to Rossini, that have reached out to the Commanders and said, more diplomatically, not as candidly, wow, you're idiots. Can we trade for this guy? And the answer so far has been no. because they're going to try to get a deal done. Pay the man his money. You know you're going to. You know it's going to happen. Don't be Jerry Jones. Don't wait until the, you know, 3 hours before the first game. Maybe it's $28 million a year, but it's going to be more than you want. It's going to be closer to what he wants because he's got you, if not in a football today sense, in a football long-term sense. Pay Terry McLaurin his money. All right, 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. It's magical. It's incredible. Don't take the technology for granted. You push those numbers, 888-710-4476, and the executive producer, DJ El Guapo, Ryan Hickey, will answer the phone and put you on the air. Sports writer over on X, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. I like people who lean into difficult conversations. I like people who call it like they see it. I don't know a lot about Sophie Cunningham, but she came on her new podcast to the defense of Caitlin Clark, and it was thunderously confrontational, and it was 100% on point. You're going to want to hear it next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
One of the happiest moments of my life. I got to the birth of my kids, and Mary and Lori. One of my happiest moments of my entire existence was the first time that I saw, I don't know if it was a video or live, Robin Ventura charge a 40-year-old pitcher and then have Nolan Ryan put him in a headlock and beat him senseless like he was a steer. I don't know what that says about me other than I like baseball.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Wow. All right. Welcome back into the show. Sports, love, and violence. Let's go. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. No lies detected by Ryan Hickey, the executive producer, who put that little rejoin together. I was just discussing Terry McLaurin, why I think the Commanders have to pay him despite the nuances and realities and negotiating perspectives of each of their camps. He wants $30 million guaranteed. A lot of the comps at his age to be 30 soon would suggest don't do it. You got to do it. Or at least that's my take. What is your take? 888-710-4ISN. Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky to get Chris's take. Chris, happy Friday. You're back on Writer Than You.
Bill, great talk. Happy Friday to you, sir. You know me. I usually lay out because you lay out so many beautiful topics and whatnot. As soon as you lay down one out, I'm like, bingo, jumping on it. And here's what I was sharing with Ryan. You know, now, my wife and I have been married for 21 years. She's a D.C. girl, so you know where her allegiance is. And I almost feel bad because in those 21 years, we've been to 3 Super Bowls, 1-2. And I kept on saying to her, her name's Chris, too. I kept on saying, Chris, you're eventually going to get that quarterback. And I said to her, when they drafted him, I said, might be it. You got him now. And my point is, I agree with everything that you said, but I wanted to bring up another angle. Remember when Seattle was able to cash in with Russell Wilson on his rookie deal and they could load up and pay all those people on the Legion of Boom before Russell had to get paid?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the blueprint. And you have that window now. So, okay, maybe in the last year or two of that deal, maybe he's not the Terry that he was. But you know what? If you could cash it in, Bill, because you know by the time it's time to pay Jaden, who knows what that base salary is going to be. And you're not going to have that flexibility. So now's the time. Jump on it and do it.
That is such a great point, Chris. Love that call, literally and figuratively. Ryan Hickey, good morning. That's a great point. The cap and all of its restrictions and the need for quarterback play, it's a requirement. You really need it at an elite level, but there are some examples. Joe Flacco's a good one from the Ravens several years ago, where if you have it at a pretty good level, and he was elite in that run. He was a top 10 quarterback who played like a top 2 quarterback in that run for Baltimore when they won it. Just take one example. The need for quarterback play and the need for financial balance means if you can get an elite quarterback on a deal that's team friendly, and the only way you do that, almost without exception, is a rookie deal, gives you this really interesting window. And it's not crazy and it's not insane and it's not stupid to talk about winning a Super Bowl for the Commanders now, because they were a game away from playing one.
And too, to your point, when you look at like these contracts and they're only going to get higher, you have this year, right, where he's very cheap. You have next year. You have the fourth year of that rookie deal. And then usually whenever they sign that extension, it's right usually after that fourth year added on. So you have basically, a 3-year window,
yeah,
roughly, where Jaden Daniels will be the cheapest and the highest value he ever will be with the Commanders. And by that point, when extension finally does kick in 3 or 4 years from now, you'll probably be towards the tail end of that McLaurin contract anyway, and should be easier to get out from it. Yeah, it lines up perfectly. You got to make the move now.
So I'm going to use an example that won't necessarily add up in the beginning, because the team I'm going to reference, the Chiefs, have won and made a lot of Super Bowls post Tyreek Hill. But the reality is that the Chiefs had to move on from Tyreek Hill, and it worked out in part because they had to pay Patrick Mahomes. And that's a choice you're always going to have to make. I know this didn't work out either, but the Packers moved on from Davante Adams in large part because Aaron Rodgers wanted to get paid, and people want to get paid. You have these you're right, these windows. And the thing about the Chiefs is Mahomes rarely was good enough, is good enough, to lose the best. I think he was the best receiver in football. I think he probably is. He certainly was when he played with Mahomes, right? It was a few years ago. He was younger, and he had Mahomes throwing the football and Andy Reid constructing plays. That guy left, and the Chiefs were just fine. It wasn't as easy. The offense maybe isn't as dynamic. There isn't a cheat code. They've got to work their way through it and grind it sometimes. They've succeeded. Aaron Rodgers wasn't capable of doing that. He didn't succeed, and it wasn't just Davante Adams. But it is. There's a history here. There's a reminder that, and there's no guarantee that Jaden Daniels will take a team-friendly deal and leave money on the table. And I'm never going to take money out of somebody's pocket. Mahomes has done that. Mahomes is by far not the highest-paid quarterback in football. Tom Brady did that many, 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 many years. And so it's a great point. It's a great point from our buddy in Lexington. All right. Good stuff. Did he say his wife's name is Chris, too?
Yes. How about that?
Chris. Double Chris? Chris's.
Chris squared.
My middle name's Joseph, so it's William Joseph. My first girlfriend, Dubuque, Iowa, her name was Billy Joe. Let me tell you, that didn't work out. That
no wasn't great. Way.
Yeah, real dumb. Yeah.
That would have been great.
Awful. No, it's terrible. I'm going back to Dubuque next week. I'm on vacation next week. Going back to Dubuque for the first time, and I don't know, man. It's been a long time. 10 years, maybe?
That's exciting.
Yeah. Last time, not last time. Many years ago, I was in Dubuque, and I was at a Blockbuster. This is a long time. Blockbuster Video, and there was Billie Joe, and I just acted like I didn't know her, and she did the same thing.
Okay.
I'm sure she felt the same shame. I dated a guy named Bill Joe. What the hell?
Right. That is fun.
Good talk.
That could have been fun, though. Billie
nah.
Joe and Billie Joe.
No. What's the best name on earth? Just what's the best girl name on earth? What's your ideal other than your girlfriend?
I don't know. I don't have one. I never thought about it.
Okay. Well, you could. Billy Joe could have been renamed this other. It wouldn't have been a good fit, right? My point is, the name alone. Yeah. Name wasn't enough. Could have been Sophie, and it wouldn't have worked. Even though Sophie Cunningham is putting the name Sophie higher on the rankings of names. Because see that transition I did there? It was real bad. As has been the treatment of Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. And I'm not even mad at other teams for going at her. I mean, it's not their job to protect Caitlin Clark to a degree. It's the league and the officials' job. But the hatred, the animosity, I've seen guys batter opposing players in the NBA and respect them the same way. I remember Dwayne Wade breaking Kobe Bryant's nose at an All-Star game in L.A., and that happened not because he disrespected or hated Kobe. It's because he was so in respect, had so much respect for Kobe, he went at him. There's a line there. I don't think that most of the players that dislike Caitlin Clark on the court are hugging her and respecting her off the court. I mean, that's obvious. That's evident. And Sophie Cunningham, now her teammate, has a new podcast. It's Show Me Something podcast. Well, she showed something as it relates to defending Caitlin when she went off on all those haters in the league.
And it literally, like, pisses me off when people are like, she's not the face of the league.
Who would be?
What?
Sabrina? No.
Eh. No, there's really good, well-known people in our league. I'm not discrediting them. Like, we have a lot of badasses in our league.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah to that. I'm all for that. But when people try to argue that she's not the face of our league,
yeah,
or if our league would be where we're at without her, you're dumb as shit.
Yeah.
You're literally dumb as fuck.
Oh, you're dumb as swear words. Yeah, you are. And it's worth listening to. It's an interesting listen, the Show Me Something podcast. Because she talked about how when she was in an opposing locker room last year, there was this conversation about we're going to show her what it is to be in the WNBA, and we're going to razz her a little bit. We're going to make her life hard. We're going to make her life miserable as a rookie. And the point she makes is she's not a rookie. And she has earned it. And there is no protection, and this hatred goes a little bit too far. And this is the thing that I don't understand. When, whether deserved or not, and I think it's deserved, I mean, if you look at just what Caitlin Clark has done as a player, and she's hurt right now, So the impact obviously is zero when she's not playing. But you look at what she did last year as a player. It's literally markedly clear that she has done historical level things in a first year. Triple doubles, 3-point shooting, certain number of points and assists in a game. She's incredible. When someone like that comes into the league and makes the league money, is so good that everybody makes more money. They want more revenue from their CBA. There's more endorsement deals. There's more eyeballs. You don't have to like the person, but you sure as hell should recognize and respect the wealth they're creating for you. And the best example I can think of, and Ryan, if you have a better one, jump in, is Tiger Woods. People forget now that when Tiger first, some of this was racism, but most of it was just jealousy. Right? It depends on the situation. When Tiger first broke onto the scene, he was cocky. He was dominant. I'm sure you're too young for this, but Charles Pierce, I think it was an Esquire, wrote this crazy profile where Tiger clearly thought it was off the record, and Tiger told some crazy jokes that were inappropriate. The kind of joke you tell at the bar with your boys, but you wouldn't want your wife to know you told, right? Like, I can't even tell them. And I disavow them entirely if my wife's listening. Those jokes were not funny, even though they were totally hilarious. Tiger was this, we forget, this cocky, rambunctious, joyous, massive talent. And it's part of the reason he pulled people into the game. And a lot of his colleagues, a lot of those golfers, you know, respected it. But many didn't. This generation of golfers, the generation that Tiger basically brushed up against and competed against when his ex-wife took a whatever it was, 7-iron, 9-iron through his car window, that generation grew up on Tiger and worshipped Tiger. Before that, when Tiger was the young gun, there were a lot of people who didn't like him. There were a lot of people who didn't respect him. There was a Masters dinner where there was some disrespect and some racist garbage that was thrown Tiger's way. And none of that's okay, but what got Tiger through that process more quickly was he made a lot of golfers rich. And there were golfers who didn't like Tiger or were jealous. And this is natural, right? You can be at the office. You can do anything for a living. Some young buck comes in. He thinks he's better than you. You find out he makes more money. He's getting all the attention. And you're like, well, this guy sucks. And then it turns out he's amazing at selling insurance, doing radio, playing basketball, whatever. And he earns respect, right? If that person made you rich, they're mirror. Like, you don't have to like them, but your bonus triples, you should be able to get on board pretty quickly. That hasn't happened in the WNBA. There's this delusional thing. She didn't create this. We did. No, you didn't. Maybe it's not fair. Maybe you don't like it. Maybe Bill Ryder and everyone that I represent should have recognized the WNBA for all of its greatness before. I would argue that point. But maybe. I don't know. I don't know. What I know is that Caitlin Clark was interesting enough that I paid attention and now I watch. Take it. Take the money. Here's my money. Take it. But I don't watch the Fast and Furious movies, but if Scarlett Johansson had started them, maybe I would have started going. She been in this? I don't think so. Take my, I was going to say $5. Take my $28 it takes to go to a movie today. Except on Tuesdays, where there's a deal, like a lot of Tuesday movies. Good for Sophie Cunningham. It's her job, by the way, as a teammate. I like it, defender. Get into it. It's great. But nonetheless, it's refreshing to hear. 888-710-4ISN. You were that guy. Everybody hated you when you showed up because you were acting like you were the man, Ryan. But we learned to love you. Actually, that doesn't work. You're the least cocky person I've ever met.
Oh, disagree. I came in here day number one, kicked the door down, told everyone how great I was, and that's how I ended up here 10 years later.
That's true. Remember when we did a game show and you couldn't come up with Cam Newton? Dane, we should play that rejoin.
You like that one, huh? You really
I
like
really
that
do.
One.
Yeah.
Is that the lasting moment? Like, if I was to pass away tomorrow.
Yes. I got to write the obit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan Hickey, a beloved fiance and son and great friend who was known for his humor, humility, and radio excellence, and also once couldn't get Cam Newton's name backwards over a 5-minute period, unfortunately died Thursday after a freak pickleball accident. He was 31.
Sound like someone who's done this before. That was very well done.
I used to write op-eds when I was a newspaper intern. But you know what? He was 89. And he had a bunch of grandkids, is what it's... Yeah, there we go.
But still, his lasting legacy...
But still, yeah.
One moment.
That's it. But he couldn't... Well, it was Mac Notwin. It was... All right, what is Mac Not... This guy's a quarterback in the NFL. His name backwards is Mac Notwin. And you freaked out and go, who's Jameis Winston? I loved it.
The thing I don't remember is how do we even... Why are we having trivia where we're spelling names backwards?
We did a trivia game, and I was just come up with random questions, and I think I was busy. I was like, all right, I'll just this will be an easy one. I think I was also, I think I normally would try to do it so Stu would lose, just because I thought it was funny. So I think I tried to give you an easy one, and then Stu's was, you know, what is pi squared or whatever, and you couldn't get it.
Sometimes the layups are difficult. Ask Ben Simmons. Layups are not easy.
Can we do that? Is it too late to do that rejoin next segment?
Unfortunately, it is not too late.
All right. So if you want to know what I'm talking about, it is one of the funniest things I've ever heard, and you can hear it too, along with some talk about a warning for Arch after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, just two games on the diamond last night while most of the league processed the trade deadline. Neither of those games disappointed. Mariners dropped the Rangers 6-0 to break their tie for the last AL wildcard spot. And Cal Raleigh hit homer number 42, the most ever now, by a switch-hitting catcher. The Braves and Reds, meanwhile, became the third teams ever to score 8-plus runs in the same inning, each putting up 8 in the 8th, creating an 11-11 tie. The Braves won 12-11 in 10. Manager Brian Snitker.
The guys hung in there and never gave up, kept fighting, and, you know, we're struggling for wins. So anytime any win we can get's big, and one like that especially.
His Braves had pieces to sell at yesterday's deadline, 16 games under 500, but they held on to DH Marcell Ozuna, who had the tie-breaking sac fly last night. Terry McLaurin has reportedly asked for a trade, still far apart with the Commanders on a new contract. The Chargers ran away with the Hall of Fame game 34-7 over the Lions. Trey Lance started a QB for LA and threw for 120 yards and 2 scores, and the Golden State Valkyries scored 6 fourth quarter points last night but still beat the Mystics 68-67. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
His name, I'm going to go Harry
Carey. Can you rhyme it?
His name backwards. Hi, it's Harry Carey. His name backwards is, I can't do Harry. Mac Notwen. His name backwards is Mac Notwen.
Come on, Trace.
Mac Notwen. Backwards. Ryan, you have to figure this out on the air. First name, Mac. Second name, Notwen. Are you serious?
The pressure is getting to you. I have no clue.
His first name.
Jameis Winston.
His first name backwards is Mac. His last name backwards is not when.
Cam Newton. Cam Newton.
He did it.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. Look at that. I think it's a great moment.
A moment that I did not realize until right now, after hearing that rejoin many times, I just picked up on. I love it in the beginning. We go, can you rhyme it? I'm so down bad. I can't figure this out. Can you rhyme Cam Newton for me? Because I can't figure it out any other way. Not good.
This is an audio medium, not a visual medium, radio. And I could still see your panic through the sounds of your words.
The silence for the first, 30 seconds as you're basically repeating Cam not win 100 times, and I'm not saying anything, the silence is deafening.
There was some bet, but then I moved to L.A., and we just didn't finish it or something. Something happened with Stu, where he had to go to a game and wear an opposing team's jersey or something?
No, I think I won, and Stu just didn't complete the bet. Classic.
Got it. I'm happy to remember it that way. So this is interesting, and you actually dug this up, so credit to you, a big and real lesson for teams that draft Arch Manning. So I called him Larry Ballard because I used to work for a guy named Larry Ballard in Des Moines, Iowa. So Larry, if you're in Des Moines, what's up? The GM of the Indianapolis Colts is actually Chris Ballard. We got Chris in Kentucky. We got Chris' wife in Kentucky. And we got Chris in Indianapolis. Yeah. And he had some interesting comments this week, basically about how they have not succeeded with Anthony Richardson. There's a lot of pressure, and when you draft a quarterback with a first round pick, wherever that selection takes place, and obviously Anthony Richardson was not the top pick in the draft, but he was the top pick for the Colts, and there's expectations. And we have this clip right where he talked a little bit at the podium about the Anthony Richardson situation.
Do you think people regret Baker Mayfield's timeline, Sam Darnold's timeline? Sometimes you got to have a little patience with a guy and let them grow through things. Now, there's got to be Like, if you just know this guy, no, he can't do it. But if you think, hey, he's on the right trajectory, why are you going to flush him just because people outside think you should flush him? I don't agree with that. I think we need to give Anthony every chance to be the best he can be. And I think he can be really good, you know, but things got to come together.
No, I'm not sure he can be good. And there have been some real hiccups, including basically taking himself out of a game because he was tired. This is something that we talked to Ryan Harris about yesterday, and I think it's fair to say that Ryan spoke with real candor and scorn, and I think insight about how Anthony Richardson lost his teammates. That's not great. One of the things, Ryan, that you pointed out that just sort of went off like an alarm bell for me as it relates to Arch is that Anthony Richardson had only had a single season starting in college. The leap to the National Football League, you know this, I know this, we all know this, when you play even at the highest levels possible in college football, the leap is brutal. The transition is difficult. The complexities of the game, the speed of the game, the not just level of competition that you're going up against on the defensive side, bigger, faster, stronger, smarter, all that stuff, the complexity of who is scheming for those guys, everything about the NFL is just, it's a big boy. It's the big boy league in the world. It's a big, big leap from playing even at Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, LSU, USC, whatever. And as you pointed out, Anthony Richardson's single season starting further shrunk his ability to grow as a quarterback and be prepared for the onslaught of the National Football League. And you went back to 2014. This is great work and great producing. Here are the players since 2014, so we're talking more than a decade, who were drafted in the first round as quarterbacks in the National Football League and only started a single season in their college careers as quarterbacks. You're going to notice a pattern here. Anthony Richardson, we told you, is one of them. Trey Lance, cautionary tale, one of them. Mac Jones, cautionary tale, one of them. Dwayne Haskins, remember that guy? One of those quarterbacks. Mitch Trubisky. And then there's Kyler Murray, who... It's really interesting to assess whether Kyler Murray is a success or not. He is a successful human being. He makes a lot of money. He was the first pick in that draft. I don't even know. What would Kyler Murray be as a... If you ranked every quarterback in the NFL right now, would he be in your top 14? That's the range, right? I'm just guessing sort of off the top of my head.
14, 18, somewhere in that range, yeah. Depending on how you feel. So like middle to below average.
If you have a group of players who are linked by some commonalities, and the best player, the face of success for that group, the person that carries the flag for that group is Kyler Murray, that group sucks. I mean, that's real talk. If Arch Manning plays at Texas this year, and this is a question, by the way, we don't know, and then comes out in the draft, and we just heard... What, the owner of the Browns, Jimmy Haslam, say he doesn't know Arch but knows the Mannings and he thinks he'll go another year. And as we sort of walked and talked this through here on the show, it is true that Arch was very patient to stay at Texas. And we don't know, but it would make sense that if you're going to be so patient to stay at Texas that you're going to be open to being there for more than a year. But if Arch Manning comes out early, there is ample evidence, and we're giving it to you right here, that he is putting himself in a disadvantage to succeed in the National Football League. And you can roll your eyes and say, oh, Ryder, he's a generational talent, maybe, yeah. He's got uncles and a granddad who are among the greatest to ever play the position. Sure, that's an advantage. He's at Texas, and they're going to be challenged. They're going to be challenged the first game of the year against Ohio State, and he'll... Kyler Murray was highly celebrated. That's why he was the top pick in the draft. Trey Lance was selected by the man and the organization with the golden touch who couldn't go wrong until they drafted Trey Lance. And the only reason that the Niners and Kyle Shanahan and that organization got away with it is because they're like, Brock Purdy, I guess. I don't know. Just, you know, practice squad. And it worked out. They thought Anthony Richardson was the guy in Indy. And by the way, the first few games he played before he got hurt, I thought he was too. Mac Jones had a pretty good debut season. Dwayne Haskins is kind of not even a punchline. He's just forgotten. He had a nice start to his career. There were moments like, oh, maybe. And poor Mitch Trubisky, who's such a nice guy. He was a Bear, so he was never going to make it. But the point is, There are reasons to worry that if you don't give guys the ample time that they need to grow, they're going to fail. And the way that we often characterize this and see this in the NFL is, man, a lot of these quarterbacks should have sat longer. A lot of these quarterbacks should have had the opportunity that Aaron Rodgers had, and that even Patrick Mahomes sat a year. I mean, people forget that he didn't play until the last game of the year, 16-game season, so week 17 against the Denver Broncos. And played well, but it didn't matter. Game didn't matter. And he was amazing in practice. Patrick Mahomes was the best player on the field when the Chiefs would practice, and everybody knew it. And they still didn't rush him. Now, they had Alex Smith, so they had an institutional advantage in that they weren't rushing it. But we frame this, and we think about this, and we should in terms of, wow, most of these quarterbacks need time in the NFL. Here's the deal. It works backwards, too. Time in college is significant. Time in college matters. The ability to just grow and have confidence and be more mature physically and emotionally and just as a human being and to learn your craft, in this case, throwing the football to other dudes, it's significant. And this to me, Ryan, it's good work by you, Ryan. It's really insightful. It's really interesting. All the guys I mentioned, Anthony Richardson, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, Mitchell Trubisky, are guys that started as rookies at some point, right? Some of these guys came in later in the season. Some guys started from Jump Street. Started most of the season in every case. First-round quarterbacks started 1 year in college. And every one of them failed, other than maybe Kyler Murray. Maybe. And let me say this, too, about whatever you're going to say, Arch Manning's a sure thing, you're overreacting, this is the old lies, damn lies statistics, which is a Mark Twain quote that I love. I got to keep going back. There's so many examples I can give you of quarterbacks who should have made it but didn't. Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, we weren't wrong on Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence got wronged by being drafted by the Jags and being coached by Urban Meyer in dysfunction. And that may explain Trevor Lawrence's reality, but it doesn't make it better for him. And Trevor Lawrence, like Kyler Murray, makes a lot of money. But whoever would draft Arch Manning ain't doing it to pay him a lot of money. That's not the goal. The goal is to win Super Bowls, is to compete. Arch knows he has money. His dad makes money. I think he's an oil trader. His uncles have money. His granddad has money. He has money from NIL, and he's going to have money. He is not exclusively or even really looking at let's make money, because he has money. He wants to succeed. So maybe the Anthony Richardson storyline out of Indy and Chris, not Larry, Chris Ballard, talking about how they basically haven't succeeded with him and there's pressure. Maybe these are warning signs to Arch. Just stay at Texas. Austin's a cool city. Money doesn't matter to him in the way that it does to most of us, I would imagine, but you can make a bunch of NIL. And we don't know what's going to happen with Texas this year, and we don't know what's going to happen with Arch, but win a Heisman, don't win a Heisman, win a national title, don't win a national title. Maybe your best interest is just to come back and try to do it again, or if you didn't do it, try to do one of those two things. All right. Nothing's reliable in life. Nothing. Other than Rob Dibble's excellence. And you're going to get some of that next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for hanging out. One of the things, there's many things. One of the things I love about having this radio show is I get to talk to friends of mine about sports. I get to have on incredibly interesting, cool people who happen to be buddies in some cases. And it's just like drinking a beer and hanging out with somebody that I would spend time with if we lived in the same city. And that 100% applies to Rob Dibble. Longtime major leaguer, World Series champion, 1990 NLCS MVP, was an all-star host of the Rob Dibble Show on 97.9 in beautiful Hartford, Connecticut, on the old X at Rob Dibble 49. Dibs, good morning, buddy. How's your summer shaping up?
It's great, man. All my tournaments are over. I did 7 16 U tournaments. Did great. Now it's on to the fall with my daughter and field hockey in high school, so life couldn't be better.
Let me ask you this question, and maybe coaching fills this void. I know so many former athletes who turn to golf. I play tennis, some turn to tennis or even pickleball to get that competitive edge. I know one guy who's in a bowling league and takes it way too seriously. Are you a pickleball player? Like, have you found any way to channel that competitive zeal?
No. I play Call of Duty.
Got it.
I don't have to move from my couch. I could have a nice glass of wine. No, I mean, I still golf. when I get a chance. But, you know, and I'll play some softball and stuff, and I'll still mess around with that kind of stuff. But nah, pickleball, you know, and I'll hit some tennis balls with my daughter. But other than that, nah, man.
Call of Duty's the answer. No, yeah. You and my kid out there, you and my 13-year-old, you know, you're drinking wine, he's drinking Gatorade. It's all happening, you know, coast to coast on the internet. It's Rob Dibble here on the show. Any big-time winner for you from MLB's trade deadline?
I think the Padres have to be your number one winner. I mean, I didn't think the A's would trade Mason Miller without getting a lot in return, and they got a huge return for Mason Miller and J.P. Sears. Just reading up on this before I came on, to get anybody's top five prospects, I think, is a win for you. Now, I don't really consider prospects a big deal unless you're stocking your minor league system with these guys that are eventually going to be in the big leagues or used for other trades. But, you know, they got this Leo DeVries kid who's number three prospect. And so when you're looking at the A's, who I think they draft really good guys, they've got a stockpile of great young talent in the big leagues. They have great young talent in the minor leagues. So kudos to them. If we're going to give up Mason Miller, who I think has one of the best arms in the major leagues, he's going to be one of the best pieces in their bullpen moving forward, trying to take out the Dodgers. I would say that A.J. Preller did a great job.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Preller. He has been so aggressive in that job and that role. And San Diego's not a big market, and credit to ownership for being willing to spend money right. And be ambitious. Do we evaluate his tenure already as a success, or do the Padres have to accomplish something more for all of this to add up to Preller did it? Preller's a guy that succeeded in that role.
Well, I think the cynics would say you have to win a world championship, but the Dodgers are in your way. So that's the number one thing. No, I think he's absolutely a success because you've the owner has allowed you to do your job. Your job is to give the manager the most pieces and the opportunity to win a championship. And, you know, the regular season, they're a great regular season team, but you're building for the postseason as well. And right up to the trade deadline, you have to be allowed by ownership to add to the payroll. So you saw what the Twins did. The Twins had like $440 million in debt. They dumped their whole team. They dumped their payroll. They dumped Correa. They dumped a bunch of guys that are going to start fresh next year. And they got a lot of prospects in return. For the Padres, they're trying to win a championship now. And you have to get the okay from ownership to say, all right, we're going to keep doing this and we're going to keep going after championships until we get one of them. So I give ownership of the Padres a lot of credit for opening up the baseball world to their president and general manager and saying, go for it. You know, I mean, you don't want to give up your future per se to win championships. The Yankees did that and it backfired for a few years. And then they made a bunch of trades and got a minor league system back. But I think anytime you're going for championships in today's game and you're up against the Dodgers, you're up against the Yankees, I felt that the Blue Jays did some nice deals. It's not easy. And so if you're not willing to spend a bunch of money on free agents or, you know, adding to payroll, I think the Padres have done well.
Rob Dibble here on the show on a Friday. This is Writer Than You. I am Bill Writer on the Infinity Sports Network. Guardians fans not loving what their team did. Orioles fans not exactly excited about their team. I've seen some complaints out there from some other organizations. Who for you did not cover themselves in glory and should have in this trade deadline that's come and gone?
I won't say the Red Sox didn't, but I love Dustin May, and I hope he stays healthy. I love that kid, and I think they're going to love him. First of all, he's redheaded. I'm sure he's probably Irish, so being Irish Catholic in Boston is not going to hurt you. It's like Justin Turner. But if this kid can pitch well, get in there with Crochet and some of these other guys, Bayo, they've got a great rotation. And they've got a solid bullpen. You know, I think it's a question of you're looking at guys that are coming back from injuries. Bregman just came back from an injury. And it's like, you know, the Yankees have some guys coming back, including Aaron Judge. I don't know where the Yankees are going to fit all these new pieces. That's a problem. So just because you trade for six or seven guys and you know, basically one-fourth of your roster, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win a championship. Now you've got to acclimate those guys in the next 2 months, and hopefully they fit in well with what's been working, like, for the Yankees. So I think the Red Sox could have done more, But if you see what all these teams were asking for, I think all the Red Sox fans that I talk to on a daily basis are happy that you didn't trade more to try to win a championship right now, because I think that the guys around you, the Blue Jays, the Yankees, they're stacked. Had you gone out there and given up your minor league system and you don't win a championship this year, I think the Red Sox fans would be more disappointed next year and the year after.
Dibs, remind me, were you traded or they tried to trade you? What was your trade history?
I was never traded. I was released by the White Sox, picked up by the Brewers in 45 minutes, and then signed a bunch of free agent deals when I was injured. So, but again, being traded is part of the business. I know some of these guys are bawling and crying. I was with the Reds for 11 years. Won a championship during the strike in 94. They left all my stuff in the alleyway. Didn't even say goodbye. So,
Really? Literally?
That's the truth. That's the truth. When I was let go at the end of the 94 season, I was not only, well, I already, PO'd them because I was the player rep for the Reds during the strike. So that wasn't good. Number two, I was injured. I'd come off of major shoulder surgery. And so they basically packed all my stuff up, put it outside. Remember, old Riverfront was just basically you could drive your car right around the locker room, put it right there. I picked it up. There wasn't anybody waiting, and I just said goodbye to all my friends inside, that the equipment managers and stuff who are still there, Rick Stowe, Mark Stowe, Bernie Stowe, their father had been working for the Reds since the 40s. Those are really your best friends, not upper management. The equipment managers, the traveling secretaries, those are the people that I would probably cry and say goodbye with. But all the other people, they could care less that you're gone.
Does it have an impact on individuals when they get traded, whether positive
Absolutely.
Or negative? Are there, like, what are the, if you get traded, right, what are the things you need to be able to do mentally or otherwise to just make sure that you go to a new team and you play well rather than, because we've seen both outcomes when guys move.
Well, my life is God, family, and baseball in that order. And, first of all, you got to straighten out your family business. Where are they going to stay? What are you going to do in the next 2 months in a new city? If you've been somewhere for, let's just say, 8 or 10 years, you've probably got a house, your kids are in school. You've got to straighten that out quickly because school starts here in the next month. Other than that, you walk through the door, you're going to be welcomed by a lot of friends. With interleague play and the way a lot of these guys play winter ball now, like I did back in the day, I knew everybody. I don't care if you're American, from another country, I knew you. And I respected your game. So that's another thing. You're going to go in there, everybody respects your game because we traded for you, so you're wanted. So you have that feeling of being wanted, but it's not easy. It's like your first day of school as a freshman in high school, man. You're not looking forward to that until you are looking forward to it, and it takes you a little bit of time. My biggest thing would be the uniform. I hated uniforms to begin with. I was always cutting my sleeves. I hated being in a uniform. It was constrictive. So I was always a problem when it came to that kind of crap. So just little things as well as the big things would bother me, New shoes. I wore one pair of shoes the entire season until I broke a spike or something. Your glove, all that kind of stuff. You got to make sure your equipment gets there. I would go bananas if I didn't have some of my equipment that because that's the comfortable, area that you're in. So a lot of those things are what people don't think about until that you see that guy maybe struggle a little bit early. But there's a lot of things mentally, because I believe the game's over 90% mental in baseball. These guys are physically almost the same, and it's the guys that have a stronger will and a stronger sense of confidence that sets them apart.
I 100% buy that. I think that's true all the way down to amateur sports. I'm talking to Rob Dibble here on the show. Dibs, I'm really curious your perspective on this, because you don't pull your punches and you're very candid, and I love that about you. I know this story is a little bit old, but I'm curious your read, your perspective on Bryce Harper telling Mr. Manfred to get the bleep out of the clubhouse if he was going to discuss a salary cap.
First of all, congratulations to Bryce Harper. You've passed your final test of growing up. He knows the game is bigger than him. And this is a financial question. This is a business question. And days after a fantastic, and let me just say fantastic All-Star game, your commissioner is going to pull this crap. So that just shows you that they're all about money first. They don't care about the perception of the game, how the fans love the game. The game's been great the last couple of years. Fans are coming back in droves. I go to all these tournaments. There's hundreds of teams playing. You know, thousands and thousands of kids love baseball and will travel thousands of miles. There's one team that I coach with and I'm around a lot. It's a 14U team. One of the players comes all the way from Georgia up here to New York, Connecticut, Delaware to play. And that's how much he loves baseball and being with the team he's on. But going back to Harper, this guy walks in and he's like, we're in financial straits. How are you in financial straits if you can defer $1 billion, you can pay, you know, a couple of players $700 million, one guy $500 million, a bunch of guys $300 million, and you are blaming the players. You guys got to help us. This is the same story they told us, Bill, when they locked us out in 1990, when we had to play 1994 with no collective bargaining agreement. People forget that, Bill. We had no contract. It ran out in 93. 94, in good faith, we started the season with no contract, no CBA, and it was basically like we're flying by the seat of our pants until they didn't make some pension payments on August 11th. But getting back to Harper, he knows this is what they're going to do. They're probably going to get locked out next year. They're going to try to break the union and see who cracks. And that was just the opening salvo by Rob Manfred. This guy's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I'm not trying to take the player's side on this. This is something that should have been discussed after the World Series is over, not 3 days after the All-Star game.
I love it. Rob Dibble, you are the man, dude. I love having you on the show. Hope the family is well. Thank you, as always, buddy, for coming on and making this program better.
They are. And to you and yours, man, I hope everybody's well on your side, too.
We are, dude. Thank you, buddy. Rob Dibble, great guy. I love that Rob is honest. It is refreshing. And Rob is honest. Rob Dibble, 49, over on X, longtime major leaguer, friend of mine, friend of the show. We got a little bit of break. I guess it's breaking news. What do you think, Ryan? Do I characterize this as breaking news or almost breaking news?
I guess almost breaking news, but okay. It still works, I think, for the sounder.
You want to do it?
Breaking news.
Almost. Is this Diana Rossini again? The Micah Parsons, I'm going to read from her breaking news post. The Micah Parsons-Cowboys relationship has deteriorated to the point where the star pass rusher is considering drastic measures, which could include a trade request or even a declaration that he is severing his relationship with the team, per multiple league sources. The background here that Rossini brings is that in a previous negotiation in the spring, Parsons agent negotiated directly with Jerry Jones, who obviously is the owner, and there was a belief, at least from the team, that they had a deal, and that when Parsons' agent pushed back and attempted to negotiate further, the Cowboys declined to engage with him and told the pass rusher, basically, take the deal, and that since then, according to this reporting, the team has refused to engage with Parsons' agent on any level, creating a problem. Now, normally I would sort of say to you or think out loud and express to you, don't know what's true, could be either way, hard to know, and that's so, but the Cowboys have been so incompetent, and Jerry Jones has been so off balance in the way he's managed this team, it's easier for me to believe that Parsons and his agent did not do something nefarious as much as the Cowboys don't know what they're doing. That's what we know. We'll stay tuned to this. We'll probably circle back to it here in a little bit. But the Micah Parsons situation is starting to make the Trey Hendrickson situation with the Bengals look like the perfect relationship, like the model for a happy football marriage. Parsons and the Cowboys on the verge of some real consequential ugliness, according to Diane Rossini. I got there on the name. Let's do a little buy or sell. It's one of the great segments in sports talk radio history, according to Ryan Hickey, and he says he's put together the best version he's ever done next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I almost said something gross, but I didn't. All right. You know what's not gross? You know what's amazing? Kurt Heelan's basketball insight. And that transition.
You rather see a drone light show over fireworks?
I've seen fireworks 59 times. Let's have some college football fireworks with Josh Pate. That's what we'll do. I hope not as well. I'd feel bad. You know what doesn't make me feel bad? Talking football with Ryan Harris. Messi's better at what he does than any athlete, I think, in the history of anything. But anyway, that's a topic for a different day. Speaking of a different day, we're going to have to talk to you on a different day. Because our time is up.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. Like calls to like. And I've noticed, Ryan Hickey, in your time as the executive producer of the show, you like the transitions. You use them buy or sell, which we're going to get to in a second. You're pretty good at them. And I love that you love when I try to match you transition for transition.
I do, because your transitions, I mean, you talk about just pulling two things that could not be anywhere near similar, and somehow you make it work. I think it's very funny.
Speaking of two things that could not be similar but that work, there's a buy and there's a sell, and they're together right now.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
I think we should start selling that transition, because buy and sell are not dissimilar. They're kind of two sides of the same coin, right?
But they are polar opposites.
Okay. I did it then. Good job.
Right? Like hot and cold.
Let's buy it.
Okay. Yeah. Come on.
Buy.
I did it.
Here are two things that are polar opposite. Jerry Jones and making sense. Jerry Jones and doing good business. Wow.
Bye. That was really good. Hit me with this question.
As you just talked about last segment, Diner Scene of the Athletic, breaking news. Micah Parsons is very frustrated right now with how negotiations with his contract are really not happening at all. And he is considering, he's not officially asked for a trade request, but is considering next steps, which could include a trade request away from the Cowboys. Parsons right now trying to become the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. Stats are there, but right now Jerry has not wanted to come to the table. Buy or sell, Bill.
Okay,
Micah Parsons should request a trade away from the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm gonna answer this, but I'm gonna do it with incomplete information, giving me the opportunity to change my mind, right?
Okay.
But I'm gonna err on the side that his agent didn't do anything untoward, and that this refusal by the Cowboys is more likely about their lack of professionalism. And if that's right, if this is another example the Cowboys are poorly run, and Micah Parsons is one of the best players in football and can't get the money he thinks he deserved, and the Cowboys won't even engage in a conversation, yeah, bye. Go somewhere else.
Bye.
It's one thing to have a disagreement. It's another to want a disagreement with someone to be resolved, and they won't even speak to you about it. Hashtag marriage. Just kidding. Hashtag kind of.
But other people are definitely not you.
But not me. I'm saying other marriages, not my own.
Of course not. Never.
My wife is listening to the show sometimes, and she is perfect.
Smart man.
Thank
can
you.
Never use,
Thank you.
Lose an argument when you're saying compliments. So while Micah Parsons has not officially requested a trade, someone who has reportedly is Commanders receiver Terry McLaurin, who yesterday, according to Jordan Schultz, among others, has requested a trade for away from Washington, as he is frustrated over lack of a new deal. Now, if Terry is traded, plenty of teams will be interested in the services, and CBS Sports listed teams like the Colts, Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, Jets, and 49ers as teams that should and would pursue Scary Terry. Buy or sell, of those teams, the team that should be the most aggressive in pursuing a trade for Terry McLaurin is the Los Angeles Chargers.
Okay, why have you singled out the Chargers? Give me some context here. What are you thinking?
To be honest with you, it's not much. I picked a team of these six. We talked to the Chargers, Justin Herbert. I think they have big expectations where it would make sense to go all in. They don't have a true number one receiver. I like Ladd McConkey, but he's not, I think, the guy that's going to help win you a Super Bowl. You have Justin Herbert, who, I mean, according to Jim Harbaugh, everyone else on the team is weighing him down. Terry McLaurin adding him could help maybe raise the team around him up. That's part of the reason.
Let's go through it. Ready? Colts aren't going to win anything anyway, so they're not as much desperation.
Yes.
Everybody would like Terry McLaurin. The Chiefs just made a Super Bowl and have won a bunch of them. It'd be a nice benefit. They don't need him. The Raiders are the Raiders. Let's just move on from that. I think the Jets are interesting. You really want Justin Fields to be healthy but also be successful. And the Niners have some talent. I'll buy. I like your approach.
Buy.
And remember, Jim Harbaugh said they've got to get up to Justin Herbert's level. It's every day I wake up trying to be as great as Justin Herbert. Maybe it would help if you woke up and got Terry McLaurin to get the Chargers up to that level. It's a bunch of garbage and silliness, but I didn't say it. Jim Harbaugh said.
And maybe if you have Terry McLaurin in the playoffs, Justin Herbert would throw three picks instead of four next year.
That's
possible.
Wow, buy the shot. Look at that.
Buy.
I wonder if he went to the Chargers and that happened, he'd be Terry in mourning.
Bye.
Okay, you're nice.
I mean, it was I like to reward creativity, and that was
working
different. I didn't see that one coming for sure.
No, right?
So I'm not gonna It's easy to poo-poo on stuff. Come on, we live in a world of negativity. It's a Friday. Let's uplift. Let's go!
Positivity!
Keep
you
on
know, pushing.
You
positive? This next question.
This, well, yeah.
No, I didn't look at it. I missed
somewhat,
it.
It's somewhat. Well, your answer definitely could be positive here.
Okay, here we go.
Former Eagles standout Brandon Graham spoke glowingly of his former team, saying this week on the Exciting Mike's podcast that he does not expect a Super Bowl hangover from Philadelphia. Now, when you go back in history, the last 12 years, the Seahawks, Patriots, Chiefs are teams that have won the Super Bowl and then returned to the big game the next year, with New England and Kansas City each going to 3 Super Bowls in a row at one point or another. Buy or sell, you are concerned that a Super Bowl hangover could hurt the Eagles.
I will buy. I think it's a real thing. They won the whole thing, but I still think there has clearly been some ricketiness with the Eagles from between their last Super Bowl appearance and the one that they just won. And there were some chemistry issues, and you never know what emerges. I also think the disease of Moore is a real thing. I think managing success is a real difficulty in any walk of life.
Bill, football's back.
Okay.
Unofficially, at least with yesterday's Hall of Fame game. And while the game does not matter and a lot of backups played, one thing for this season was unveiled, and that was the virtual measurement system that was used, which is replacing the chain gang for the season. Now, similar to Hawkeye technology in tennis, the replay is shown on TV with the ball spotted first, and then the first down line appears so you could see where the football is either short of the line again or, in fact, past the first down marker signaling a first down. Buy or sell, this is a change that you welcome.
I'm going to cautiously buy it.
Buy!
I like the Hawkeye technology. I don't want robo-umpires. It kind of depends situation to situation. But this is such a game of inches. It matters so much. And I kind of like the way that it feels futuristic. Are you down on this? Is this a real question for people?
I think it's just different. And people always feel like bristle at change at first.
I kind of like it.
And it's also faster. Like it's up, game stops.
It's fat.
Look at the screen. We don't have to worry about old men jogging across, sometimes across the other side of the field for the chains and jog back.
I don't think football games are too long, but I certainly think that they could be shorter, right? So it doesn't feel like baseball games before Manfred, to his credit, made some adjustments. NBA games are way too long because the fourth quarter is as long as the last 5 minutes is as long as it feels like the first 43 minutes. I think anything that shortens the game that's not problematic is great for the game. I'm with you. I like it.
And it's good fun. News for maybe those that are not, the chain gang is still employed. They're just there as a backup system in case the Hawkeye goes down.
For now.
For now. Yes, you are very correct about that. Yesterday, MLB trade deadline came and went. Big splashes were made, Bill. Padres acquired one of the best closers in the game in Mason Miller to bolster what already is the best bullpen in baseball. They also landed 2 bats, including all-star Ryan O'Hearn. Mets, Phillies each loaded up their bullpens as well and acquired outfielders. So when you look at the landscape of the NL as we go into the home stretch here, buy or sell, the Padres are the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the NL.
Other than the Cubs or just in general? What are you talking about? They are by. Some of it, too, is I don't think the Padres are afraid of the Dodgers. That doesn't mean that they're better, obviously, but they beat them in the playoffs a few years ago. There's a animosity that brews between them, but it's disrespect mostly. The Dodgers don't take the Padres seriously. I think that's to the Padres' advantage.
So the position during the trade deadline that was the most targeted was bullpen help. Big-time closers from the A's, Twins, Giants, and Pirates are traded, while teams like the Mets, for example, landed 3 relievers at the deadline. Now, despite a need for starting pitchers, guys, big names like Sandy Alcantara, Mitch Keller, Zach Gallen were not traded. Buy or sell, Bill, come playoff time, a great bullpen is more necessary than great starting pitching.
Oh, wow. I'm going to sell that.
Sell.
However, I think in some ways it's like saying a great number 2 hitter is more important than a great cleanup hitter. I think you got to have both if you want to win a World Series, as well as luck and good fortune and some durability and some timely hitting and all those things. But I do think that if I had to choose, I would take great starting pitching, in part because we talked about this yesterday. You can roll guys out with a little bit less rest, and the best pitchers in baseball are stoppers for their teams. They stop losing streaks, and I know that pitchers don't get to play every day the way that a position player does, but I think there's a unique reality that a starting pitcher in a must-win game, or if you've lost 5 in a row, whatever's going on, they can do what a hitter can't do. They can single-handedly go out there and make sure you win the game if they play it at a perfect level. And that becomes wildly important in a playoff series, in a playoff game. And so I think bullpen help is really significant and really important, especially if you're going up against the Dodgers, because that lineup is just going to come and come and come and come and come. And if you get through six and a third innings, and you're up 1-0, and your bullpen is okay, there's a chance that it's 6-1 by the time you get to the end of the game. But if you make me choose, I'll take starting pitching.
Interesting about that. I think it's also mentally tough, because if you have like an okay starting pitcher and a lockdown bullpen, it is almost like weird of like, okay, we got to get to this guy now. And it's like almost like more pressure to get to the bad pitcher, because as soon as like the sixth inning comes, if you're trailing, it's almost like, and it's boom, 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 it's like, oh boy, like we're screwed. It's like almost reverse pressure.
The thing is, like, great bullpens are great, but it's one thing to be the third or fourth best guy out of the bullpen and be lights out in August than to do it in October against the Dodgers in the sixth inning in a 1-1 game when it's Shohei Ohtani and there's a runner on second, right? It's just a... Starting pitchers have a larger sample size with pressure. Bullpen guys can be great, but we've seen sometime... I mean, you're relying... Thing is, you're not talking about the best closer in baseball. You're relying on a lot of guys to all be at their best under massive pressure. Again, we're arguing in the margins here,
right?
But I think I'd take a starting pitcher.
And you could argue there's no more position more volatile in baseball or even in all sports than a bullpen. You know, lights out one day and the next.
For real. For real. But I'd much rather have a guy, you know, throw a three hitter through seven and require my bullpen to go two. And by the way, also give your offense another inning or two to try to scratch out some runs, then, okay, way to get us through five, random guy. Now the bullpen's got to go four innings. And that means I need four different guys or five different guys if a specialist is coming in, if a lefty's coming in, to get us through the rest of the game.
Two more here, Bill. Yesterday, a little basketball talk. The Knicks and Mikal Bridges agreed to a four-year, $150 million extension. Now, it's noteworthy that Bridges did not take the full max contract. Now, it was about $6 million, so not a lot, but still left some money on the table in order for the Knicks to have salary cap flexibility and stay out of that second apron that has proven right now to be deadly for a lot of teams. Now, Bridges followed the lead of Jalen Brunson, who last year signed his extension, and by signing it a year early instead of waiting to this offseason, left $113 million on the table. Buy or sell? You applaud the selflessness by the New York Knicks.
I'll buy. I love it.
Buy.
Buy or sell, it's crazy that this guy is going to make $37.5 million a year, and Terry McLaurin may not get to 30.
Buy.
It's also crazy that you could call him quote unquote a team player that's getting $37 million per year. It's funny how that works, right?
Look, good for him on making it on giving his team some flexibility and not burning any bridges. But he's
bye.
I'm with you. He's gonna be just fine.
And I want to finish with this, since you are going to Iowa next week for a big little family vacay.
I am. A little family time.
Buy or sell, you'll make a trip to the Field of Dreams.
All right. So we're going. So I'm going to be in Iowa City next week, but we're going to do a day in Dubuque, where I'm from, and do a day in Des Moines, where my wife and I got married. And it depends if we were going to go, but we haven't watched Field of Dreams yet. We don't think our kid. You know what? Buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell, I've got to make my kids watch Field of Dreams if I'm going to take them to the Field of Dreams.
Sell.
Buy or sell, you've seen Field of Dreams.
Buy.
Proud of you.
It was a long time ago, but check it off the list. I've seen an epic movie.
It's a great movie.
But also, too, like if you go, let's say you go Wednesday, pick a day, and then you watch the movie on Thursday on the flight home, I don't think like it loses anything by going to see it first in person, then watching it. I feel almost anything is like, wow, we just were there. That's so cool.
Okay.
I think it go either way in terms of you see it beforehand, afterwards. I think it would still be special.
Twice when I was in high school, I tried to go there and got lost and didn't find it and then drove home.
Different time.
Yeah. There weren't maps on your phone. Yeah.
Was it dark?
Take a left. One time it was. Take a left at the Scarecrow.
You see the corn stalks on the right that seem a little off. You've gotten
it's
too
more
far.
Like at the third dirt road, take your next right on the asphalt road.
Easy to get lost.
And then you end up at a farm. Can I help you? Field of Dreams? Goodbye. They've had that moment a couple times. Is that all of them? That's what we got.
That is all. Figure to end on a nice little note there.
You're a Penn State guy. You're a Penn State fan. That's your team.
Yes, I am.
Will James Franklin be the bum of the week? We'll find out after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, as Hickey just mentioned, the Athletic says things are now so bad between Micah Parsons and the Cowboys that Parsons is considering all his options, including a trade request or simply saying he won't play for them again. The player and team not currently negotiating a new deal, and apparently the Cowboys refuse to speak with Parsons' agent at all. Parsons is still at training camp, but has yet to take the field, much like Commanders receiver Terry McLaurin, who is also after an extension, but talks in Washington reportedly stalled as well, so McLaurin is now asking for a trade. There was also football last night, the Hall of Fame game in Canton. The Charger backups beat the Lion backups 34-7. Trey Lance threw two touchdowns for Jim Harbaugh's team.
Big night for Trey. Just played calm, played cool, collected. Ran the operation, thought he threw the ball really well.
Two Detroit QBs combined for three picks. Trade deadline acquisition, Eugenio Suarez had a double score to run in the Mariners' 6-0 win over Texas last night. Those two were tied for the last AL wild card. Also in the win, Seattle catcher Cal Raleigh clubbed his 42nd home run. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Michael Gatewood's really happy with the show. And what we said about Micah Parsons, he tweets, stupid, you know bleep about football. You're right. Micah Parsons should apologize to Jerry Jones, tell him he'll take the minimum amount a veteran can take, send you a note about how smart you are, Michael, and move on with his life. I apologize. All hail Jerry Jones. Or you're an idiot. All right, 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Maybe we'll make that guy bum of the week. 888-710-4ISN. This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. NASCAR is in the home stretch as they head to my neck of the woods. I'll be there, actually. The Iowa Speedway in Newton, Iowa, for the Iowa Corn 350. There are four races left in the regular season, with three postseason berths still on the line. I won't be in Newton. I'll be in Iowa. I'll be a little east of there. A little east of there. I mean, it's in Newton, but maybe Michael Gatewood thinks it should be in Des Moines. We'll just move that, too. We'll just change that, too. Is that, would that work? Are we not dumb anymore? I can take criticism. I just can't take it from idiots. All right. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. What's up, Ryan? You good? You ready?
You probably Before we do this. No, we're going to get a nice tweet. Nice little, like, great show.
No.
Friday.
You're dumb because I disagree and I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm a Cowboys fan. All right, man. Go celebrate your five Super Bowls in the last 9 years, and I'll try to study up on football at the same time. Can you play Ryan Harris on James Franklin for me from earlier this week?
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
You're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
All right, well, obviously James Franklin is nominated. This guy could easily win. I'm going to nominate, what's this guy's name? Michael Gatewood. Because, Michael, this isn't social media, you ex-tough guy. This is the real world. We can talk to each other, and you can find a way to, in a discourse, be somewhat respectful. I'll respect the 11 titles in a row that the Cowboys have won while I learn football. Michael Gatewood, nominated for Bum of the Week. James Franklin's a strong candidate. I'm tempted, Ryan Hickey, to just move on and end it there and just give it to him. But I guess I should go through, because you agree, right? He's a bum of the week.
But he's not done anything this week. He's not yelled at a reporter or blown a game yet.
Yeah, but you are in agreement. It's just a great point by our guy, by our dude, Ryan Harris.
I would agree with what Ryan said. I cannot argue against.
Who else would you like to nominate to try to protect your guy, James Super Sensitive Franklin?
Here's a good one. I think we should nominate Henry's former teacher.
Ooh, Henry's former teacher.
The one that was very mean to him, that when Henry saw her on the street this week said, yeah, I remember you. You made my life a living hell. That's crazy.
Yeah. He did. And she was walking with her friend. All right. But that's real talk. He did do that, didn't he? Okay. That's a good one. I'm going to nominate the Cowboys. How have you gotten yourself, it's part of my studying, Michael, how have you gotten yourself to a position where you won't even talk to the agent of the guy who's critical to what you do? What a joke. I think I got to nominate Mark DeRosa too, right? Like, look, the realities between Major League Baseball's owners and the Players Association are going to be complicated. And Rob Dibble and I see this differently. He loves it. Bryce Harper did. I don't. But if you're DeRosa and you're basically a paid shill and or ambassador, you can't even you have to have the sophistication not to sound like you're threatening players because they voiced a disagreement against Manfred. I'm going to nominate Madden 26. I don't care what anybody says. Patrick Mahomes being the fourth highest rated quarterback is ridiculous. And I know the argument, well, it doesn't matter. It's about this year. Any GM in football, tell me if I'm wrong. Is there a single GM, if you just redrafted quarterbacks this year, that would take Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen over Patrick Mahomes? I don't think there is.
I would agree.
If you're the Bills and you could swap Josh Allen for Mahomes tomorrow, if the Chiefs lost their... If Jerry Jones, Michael Gatewood, was in charge of the Chiefs all of a sudden, it's like, I'll trade you Mahomes for a Josh Allen. The Bills are doing that deal.
Probably not, because they're going to trade Allen for Caleb Williams. But assuming that deal can't go through, then yes.
If that one can't, yeah.
That's plan A. Mahomes is plan B.
Thank you. You know what? I'm also just going to nominate Jerry Jones, just for being Jerry. This is tricky, you know what I'm saying?
It's tricky because you have like four different Cowboy affiliations here that are like, they all should win, but have you ever had like a four-way tie for first place?
Man, this is tricky. You know what we're going to do? For your bumness being residually alive, for not having done anything this week but still being nominated, for Ryan Harris having to call you out for being the most thin-skinned person in America outside of maybe Michael Gatewood that I can sense, and for undercutting Penn State's hopes even before they begin as maybe the best team in the country, James Franklin, the hope of Ryan Hickey's life, you're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
That felt good. That felt right. You know, sometimes when I get done, it feels wrong, like I made a mistake. That felt correct. I liked it.
You ever watch an awards show where people are shocked at the results? Like, I can't believe this actress won or this movie won.
That's Is that how you're feeling?
I feel that way.
I got to go back to the guy that I'm going after who's a listener. I appreciate him listening. This is the rule on the show, and I've said this for years. You can disagree with anybody, me or anybody else, but it has to be respectful. You can't, none of this, you're dumb because I disagree. Now, it might be hard for this gentleman to make a cognizant point. I don't know. Maybe that's a difficult thing. You know, maybe I'm using too big of words to make a point that we understand. But you're dumb because I disagree. But beyond that, and look, maybe it'll turn out that Parsons' agent is a problem or that Parsons is unreasonable. That does not seem the likely reality. And if you're the Cowboys, and this is the thing, agents aren't there to be your friend if you're an owner or GM. Their job is to negotiate. Their job is to be difficult. Their job is to get their client more money. And I've seen this because in my own world, right? People have agents who do what I do for a living. The reality is that the bosses who can't separate the agent's approach from the person that the agent is representing are the problem. That's a lack of sophistication. That's a lack of professionalism. That's a lack of understanding about how things work, which basically sums up the way the Cowboys have been run forever. The Cowboys haven't won a playoff game in a billion years. They have not been, as it relates to actually having a team that has done something in the playoffs and had momentum. When's the last time they were in an NFC Championship game? I can't even remember.
1995.
Were you born in 95?
I was 1 year old.
So you were barely alive the last time these guys made an NFC Championship game.
I could not form a thought the last time they were in a big game.
They have been poorly run for a very, unlike today. They have been poor. Yeah, see what I did there? Anyway, just this the Micah Parsons thing, the news of this is interesting, but the reality is the same reality. This is a poorly run organization that gets in their own way and doesn't know what they're doing. You don't want to give Micah Parsons a certain amount of money? Don't. You think his value isn't the value he thinks that he's worth, and that's going to lead to some sort of schism? Fine. We're not going to have conversations with the agent to the point where this guy's thinking about just saying, I'm done? That's a Cowboys problem, Michael. And that's the history of the Cowboys for literally decade after decade after decade. All right, fun show. Thank you to Michael for the content. Thank you to Rob Dibble for being on the show. Thank you to all of you who contributed in nice, positive, interesting ways on the phone line or over on social media. Thank you to Ryan Hickey, who crushed it. Thank you to James Franklin for being bum-like, to be bum of the week. Appreciate his contribution to the program. I'm Bill Ryder. I'm off next week. I'll be in Iowa. Have a marvelous weekend. Have a great week next week. But you'll be in good hands. Hope you're still listening here on Ryder Than You.